So, hello and welcome. We've got a, this is another episode of our Mental Health Week podcast where we are looking at sort of consumers' contributions to communities. And right now we are talking to Catherine. How's it going? How are you doing, Catherine?
I'm good.
You good?
Good, thank you. So, we're thinking about, we're talking about communities. I guess one of the communities that I think of that I belong to, which might sound a bit funny to people, is that I just belong to the research community and to the consumer academic community. And I'm excited to talk to you, but I was just thinking about that because I actually just got off another video call from our community in New Zealand as well. So I just think it's nice to be connected in and be able to have a community that goes all the way to New Zealand and back.
Yeah, so there's not just, you know, your community here, but you're talking about like the communities you're a part of and the mental health community you're a part of. They extend beyond even our national borders. They extend to New Zealand and abroad.
That's right. So I belonged to a community, or I still belong to a community, because I was a community mental health worker. So I still have a relationship with other people that I would have known that would have worked for in the community mental health area as well. And I still run into them. I actually also run into an old colleague just randomly through my university email, because we're all social workers, and social workers is still kind of a small group. And so it's just really lovely to have people from my past that have been coming back, and I was able to thank him because he was actually coming from that community mental health space, was one of the first people to give me a chance to talk about recovery and lived experience to clinicians, and to have that voice in that space. And it's nice to see that these people are still around, and it's great to have a chance to reconnect with them. And then I'm connected, I guess, within the consumer academic community here with Melbourne. But the great thing about research is that research is about being across not just the state and across the country, but it's about being connected internationally. And that's why I was interested in talking about what it's like to belong to a research community, because it is dynamic, it's international.
Yeah.
We have different languages and different cultures, and it lets me access and speak to different people.
So, yeah, because for a lot of people, the idea of research, the imagery can be quite isolated, but there seems to be a real connection, and not just a connection in the work you're currently doing, but a connection over time as well.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, you know, one of the great things that people often don't realize about research is that we tell stories over a really, really, really long time. So projects or ideas and thoughts that I had, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, they get the chance to develop and be told over a longer time. And then sometimes, and I said, we get to work with people internationally, and we get to talk internationally at conferences. We get to share that to an even broader kind of audience.
Ooh.
But I also think you're right in that research can be a bit lonely.
Yeah.
I spend a lot of time on my own. and I spend a lot of time now connecting via Zoom. So you can be kind of really lonely but still existing within a community at the same time.
Yeah, so how do you – so if you are in a sort of – because I don't think research would be alone in that aspect. If you are feeling alone in your community, what are some, like, ways that you, in your research capacity, sort of reach out and build that wider community?
Oh, look, I think that's a really good question. A couple of things – because I'm not able to do face-to-face so much, is I'm able to use my Twitter account, and I'm able to use my LinkedIn account, so I can still see and communicate other people. I liked LinkedIn because it's a good professional space. It's like professional Facebook, and it lets me to keep track of people when they move, so that even if they move to a different position, if I know where they are in LinkedIn and I want to connect with them and talk to them, then I have a way of trying to do that. I do spend a lot of time talking via Zoom, and what I really like about that is it lets me see my colleagues outside of a university setting, and it lets me see them in their own home. So I've met a lot of dogs and cats in the last couple of weeks, and a lot of kids. And that's a different part of my relationship with some of these people that I wasn't able to have before. So that's nice.
So, because that's, you actually raise a really interesting point there, because I've talked to other people as part of this podcast series we're doing, and a lot of people actually said sort of the opposite, that with they feel less connected, they feel less personal, less communicative. But you're saying there's actually, with the technology we have available to us, LinkedIn and Zoom, like you mentioned, it can create actually like a more personal connection, because you're, it's taking you outside of those workspaces. It's into your own spaces to connect.
That's right. I'm seeing kids' artwork. I'm seeing husbands walk by and girlfriends walk by. And that's really nice, because I work in a lived experience space, in a public way, in a professional way, in all the time. But I don't often get to see other researchers' personal space and personal world. Mm-hmm. Sometimes as much as they get to see mine. So yes, that's been really nice.
And is that sort of like personal community and that personal connection something you want to look at even like expanding beyond this period of time, or you're pretty happy with how it is?
I've got to say, everybody's different. And look, my husband is really, really, really missing people at the moment. That's his personality. That's how he feels about the world. That's his space. I've just finished my PhD, so I'm really tired. I'm really tired, and I'm enjoying not working 6 days a week. And I'm liking being at home and having my personal space, because he still goes to work. So I have my personal space at home. And I'm finding that that's actually really restorative and really settling compared to the stress and intensity of probably the last 4 years. So I think I'm okay like this for now, because sometimes it's healthy to renegotiate your level of connection.
Yeah.
But I'm really looking forward to, because I'm feeling more restored now, really looking forward to seeing friends and all of that as well, and to be able to go out and, you know, I miss like the hobby stuff that I used to do as well.
Yeah.
So I used to do pottery and swimming and stuff like that, and I miss seeing those other human beings that, you know, I don't need them for work or anything like that, and I might not have long going relationships with them, but I just like seeing them every week.
Yeah.
And having a chat every week, and I'm looking forward to when things are ready to open back up so that I can have that back. I think I'm ready for that, Nelly.
Yeah. So you're also saying as well, something I want to sort of delve into a bit there, is that there is a real importance in creating balance with how you connect with communities, and that can be balance in taking time for yourself, as you mentioned, or being involved in the work, or actually finding time to be in part of other communities. So is that something you would say, that there is an importance to the balance?
I think there is. And the other thing as well, because we do kind of think of people in research as being, you know, you go in your office and you're all scholarly and you're on your own. And I do spend a lot of time alone. But research is actually, I think, all about relationships.
Yeah.
And being collaborative. So actually, I would say a lot of what I do in my work is deeply connected to other human beings. So I think you're right in that way, that balance between having some solitary time, that low sensory time, that nurturing time, is well balanced against actually also still being deeply socially connected for work.
Yeah.
And to all different kinds of people as well.
So I want to sort of look, because you've talked about this, how amazing this, how the research you're doing is, and how it can you connect with it. If you don't mind me asking, what brought you to getting involved with research? What brought you to being involved with that?
That's a really good question. So after I had my inpatient admission, I decided that there was lots of things in my life that had to change for me to be healthy and happy. And one of the things that I identified was my job, because I didn't think that my job had much meaning. So it was really difficult to go to. And I identified that that was something that really kind of put me off balance. So I decided that I had to change jobs. So when I changed into a mental health career. I started by doing a cert four in alcohol and other drugs counselling.
Yeah.
And then from there I went into social work. And I've always been extroverted and I have like a background in performance and art. So previously I've been deeply connected to all of those kinds of communities. And I felt like I had a really strong voice and I had lots of things to say that were unique to me and that were important to contribute. So I was also always really scholarly. I was always really interested in, mm-hmm. in being in a university and having university experiences. So I actually have two bachelors as well as my PhD.
Yep.
So I have done like a fair bit of school. and I thought that the jobs that I think it's over 10 years now. I think it's like 12 years. And I liked the look of what I saw my tutors doing. So I thought that, and I knew that that you had to have a PhD to work at a university in a faculty in the jobs that they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was always my backup plan in social work, was that I would do a mental health for as long as I could.
Yeah.
I knew that there was a really high burnout rate as well in adult mental health.
Yeah.
And I made it to nearly 10 years, but I did start to feel that I was burning out. So I started to do my honours in preparation to do my PhD so that when I left direct practice, that I would be able to go and do my PhD at that point.
Yeah.
And then from a PhD, what you hope is you're going to work out as something like a researcher, or for me, I'm a postdoctoral research fellow.
Mm-hmm.
And so the funny thing is, I'm now my office at La Trobe is exactly the same as all the people who I'd go and I'd knock on their door, and I was a social work student there, and it's really funny because. My discipline lead also completed her Bachelor of Social Work at La Trobe, and we still have a lady there who she read my honours thesis, and yeah. She apparently had taught my discipline lead as well. So there's a sense of ancestry in the department where we've all kind of gone through a cycle of being students and going into the workforce and then coming back and bringing that experience and building that social work team and that social work knowledge at La Trobe. So
I absolutely love that ancestry comment because, yeah, we do talk about intergenerational connection within familial communities, but having that in a chosen community, a community of interest is really cool. That's a really cool point. It's good to talk about those sort of things. So sort of the question is that you've done all this amazing work and a lot of time and energy into this. So with the sort of work you've done, how do you feel like it is benefiting the communities you're a part of?
Well, you know, one of the ways that I benefit other researchers, because my research focus is around the better incorporation and the better voice of lived experience in service delivery, because that's where I'm from, and in research, because that's what I do. So one of the really important things about being a consumer academic is that capacity to have audience and to speak to a range of different people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm able to do things like I did a presentation for our research focus area in building communities at La Trobe, and that was around the better incorporation of lived experience in research and service delivery. And a lot of people turned up to hear about that. There was a great interest from other researchers who might not have had access just through their own course of their career to lived experience knowledge and lived experience voices. So it's really great to have that chance to talk to people, especially people who are interested, that want to learn more, that might not know how to go about connecting into lived experience.
And with the sort of, would you say that then your contributions could even extend beyond a research base into even supporting in? Yeah.
So I've worked quite a lot with also with government. And with places like the Office of the Chief Psychiatrist, as a way of kind of extending in and having a voice, and not just having a voice, but being able to actually shape and make decisions that can impact directly on service delivery. So I do a lot of things called evidence reviews. So I specialise in scoping reviews and systematic reviews. So I do a search of the literature, and I look at the evidence that we can gather, and I can make recommendations around that. It means I can also have a platform to critique how more empirical or clinical papers might have spoken about other people,
mm-hmm.
And might have spoken about lived experience in a way that I think could be improved. So that's kind of the stuff that I'm able to do there. There's some stuff that I do that directly has an impact on service delivery as well. So I just did a big project called Peers and EDs, and I did a lot of the work for that, and that's around bringing peer support workers hopefully into the ED. So we again were able to find lots of different kinds of evidence that could be used by services to develop and implement peer workers in the ED.
Yeah.
So I still get to contribute all the way through industry, through policy and government. And that's the really special thing for people who are able to and who are interested, is that when you kind of, if you're able to do your PhD, if that's something you want to do, is that it does let you speak on a different level. It's like, yeah. It's like having a key. You can kind of get into conversations now and have the ability to contribute now on a level that I couldn't do before.
That sounds absolutely brilliant. And for those sort of people who do want to get involved in research and do want to be a part of that, what sort of advice or message do you want those people to have?
I think it's really up to everyone to decide what they want to do with their lives. And if you do want to devote yourself to school and to doing university, I think the main thing that I was told when I was a PhD student was the people that got PhDs were the people that just kept going. So the only way you wouldn't get a PhD almost was if you gave up along the way. I think that's really true. I think it is about having support and doing what works for you, because it is a big thing to do, and it goes forever. So you think it finishes when you submit, and they don't. They send you back your thesis, and you have to change every comma and every grammar mistake and every comment that you have ever made. And you'll often be doing this while you're starting looking for work and doing new jobs, so it can feel like it goes forever. So it's about having all those skills around resilience and your good boundaries and being able to look after yourself, and being really good at accessing that support. My advice for people who are really, really good at school is to find a scholarship, because it's much easier if you don't have to work at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So keeping an eye open for competitive scholarships and project scholarships. The thing that I did that I can recommend for people who would like to do something like this was I applied for a competitive scholarship for a project. So it meant that they already had funding. They already had a big pot of money. It also meant that they had a big team of experts and senior people. And I thought, you know what, I want to be in with a big group of people who know what they're doing. I'm like, I reckon I can learn a lot from these people. And you know what, I was right. That was the best part of my PhD, because I now do something very different. Is that I got a chance to learn how to do my work really, really well and be an academic really, really well from working with some really high-profile people.
That's absolutely brilliant. Well, I think that's sort of where we're going to wrap it up, but thank you so much for the time to speak to me and to be a part of this, and that was absolutely brilliant and really informative. Thank you.
Thank you.